Hi, I'm Leslie Lindenauer, Director of the Center for Excellence in Learning and Teaching at Western Connecticut State University. So a few years ago, I was in my history class, and we were studying the history of the Chesapeake and the sort of brutal encounter between John Smith and the indigenous people in the Chesapeake region. And I was reminded at that moment of that iconic scene in Raiders of the Lost Ark, where Indiana Jones confronts the guy coming at him with a scimitar by pulling out a gun. And so I made that reference to my class, and crickets. Not a single person in the room knew who Indiana Jones was, nor had they seen Raiders of the Lost Ark. So I'm inspired to have this conversation, to invite people to talk about what it means to confront a generation gap in our classrooms, to really tackle that culture gap when culture should serve us and our students in the classroom. Listen, our goal is to create classrooms that focus on inclusion. We are not a monoculture. The university is a Hispanic-serving institution. We have students who come from the region whose backgrounds are diverse. So how do we use that diverse culture to make connections between ourselves and our students? I've invited today for our conversation Dr. Kate Alaco, who is a professor in the Department of History, Philosophy, and World Perspectives, and Dr. Don Gagnon, who's a professor in the Departments of Theater Arts and English. Welcome.
Well, thank you very much for having us on my own behalf. And Kate, good. Nice to see you as well. A cozy little team here. And I think you alluded, with your having alluded to the Indiana Jones catastrophe, apparently in the classroom, I think it's safe to say that not only have all of us had at least one of those experiences that will continue to live with us, but that probably all of our colleagues have, certainly of a certain age, right? So yes. In this sense, I don't want to say that it's kind of an epidemic so much as it is endemic, perhaps, to the experience. And if I may take 10 more seconds alluding to something that you just said before we went live, Kate, we kind of age out, right? We age out of the discourse of pop culture as we get towards retirement. So what are our choices? We retire.
Yes,
thank you for
choice.
The suggestion. Yes. It's under consideration. right? Or the only other alternative, if we're trying to bridge that gap, is then to have to make efforts that we did not have to make when we were younger and unafraid, right? We actually have to go into the internet, which I don't know we even had when we started teaching, and find those references and find the discussion that the students are having and join their discussion rather than expecting them to come to us.
That's true. I mean, another thing we could consider too is actually hiring new faculty. Wow, look how quickly that got political. What, right? 8 seconds in? But everyone in our department's been there for at least 16 years, right? So we've become very comfortable with who we are and with what we do, and we're teaching the same classes now for 16 years, right? And maybe if we could hire new people, that would help us connect to other demographics and to other age groups, etc.
Okay. Not to replace, but to add to.
To add to.
Yes, okay, just wanted to clarify.
Well, we've lost two faculty members in our department, and neither have been replaced. Wow, that was fast. Okay. So have you had an Indiana Jones catastrophe?
Yeah, and I suppose they're all kind of subjective, but I think the first time that I realized I was aging out of the kind of pop culture conversation was when I mentioned the Beatles in a conversation in the classroom, and again, got the blank stare of death from students. Yeah, and even when I made references to certain songs or resonances that I thought they might have become familiar with somehow, it was just numb. It was dead air.
Well, the Beatles predate us, mm-hmm. and we know who they are, but I suppose this goes back to this idea of the monoculture. Mm-hmm. The thing that's been most shocking for me, so I'm a medievalist, mm-hmm. And you know, nobody gets medieval history. They don't get European history in high schools anymore. They don't have any base So I have zero expectation in the classroom except for King Arthur. And my students don't know who King Arthur is.
I was going to ask about if King Arthur might be the lodestone that brings everybody into the convo.
That's the one thing I expect. I mean, I explain everything. You know, this is who this is and this is how the system was. And I break things down to very rudimentary components. But I didn't think I'd have to do that for King Arthur. And I did. And I was very surprised by that because at least there's Disney, right? I mean, at least there's, what's his name? Martin. Oh, my God, what's his name? Lawrence. There's Martin Lawrence, right? I mean, it feels like there are people who are still bringing this cultural touchstone back. I mean, there's a new King Arthur movie every 2 years, but I was very surprised.
Or Spamalot and the Monty Python crew.
Oh, that was funny. You know. Yeah, that was funny.
So that was surprising. They're out there, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the other things, of course. I don't talk about the Smiths anymore in class. I have to find some new, like, depressing music to make a reference to. But you can just ask them, right? You say, so what do your friends, when they're depressed, what do? Who do they listen to? They go into their room. They're not smoking, right? They're not dyeing their hair black. They're not listening to the Smiths. Turns out now they're vaping, and they're listening to whatever I forgot. Mm-hmm. It's hard. Mm-hmm. But so I'm now 52, and I've reached an age in my non-academic life at which I have stopped caring about a great deal of things, and I don't feel I need to keep up with what's cool and what's trendy and whatever, and I guess sometimes that does carry into the classroom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's not necessarily a matter of being cool, though it would always be nice to stay cool, right? But it's a matter of keeping the classroom discussion hot.
Yes, that's true. Right. That's a good way of saying it.
Right, and so I think, again, there's that kind of incumbency upon us, as much as we may want to resist it, that, listen, if I'm going to be here until I retire, I know I want to have fun in the classroom, yes. So maybe I need to do homework now as if I were a graduate student and be prepared for the classroom in my own
Absolutely.
Way. Right. And I don't mean that in any kind of critical way. We all come to the classroom as we want to come to the classroom. But that's how I inhabit my classroom is I don't want to stand behind a podium. So I'll be damned if I'm not going to bring in what I need to ensure that I don't have to stand behind the podium.
That's true. Of course, I also have like zero interest in keeping up with Marvel movies, and I can't imagine like sitting through those, right?
More and more, they're less and less interesting.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and it does seem as though it's the same story over and over again. But I've been here since 2006, and I felt in 2006 that I could talk to my students. I could reference Britney Spears, you know, who postdates me, but they knew who it was, and I felt cool.
Was cool.
Yeah, thank you. Mm-hmm. And it was helpful. But now... Well, first of all, now her story is completely different, right? Like, she's not the ingenue, right? She's not the new pop star. She's now the tragic, whatever she is. I don't know. But
tragic says it all.
I used to use Roseanne in my Intro to Women's Studies class, and now she's completely changed. I mean, that's another very strange thing, to watch these people who had been so sturdy for so long, like, transform in ways you never expected.
So here we go, right? So what you are speaking to, Kate, I think is probably a clear illustration of the ways that we think about pop culture and what culture is, right? Is it a product or is it a process, right? Is it the way that we engage over time as opposed to kind of in space? Right. And one of the things I was thinking about before today was another incident, perhaps less kind of indicative of my advancing age, but in a course on African-American literature, in 1900, there was a song written and published by the Johnson Brothers entitled Lift Every Voice and Sing. And over time, and actually quite a very short time, it became known unofficially as the Black National Anthem. Mm. And if you were to go to a Black family picnic or a family reunion, church event, oftentimes even athletic events, Lift Every Voice and Sing would be sung as if it were, you know, kind of replacing the national anthem
that
nobody can sing. Okay. So it was a large part of the culture, but it also functioned as a pop culture element, right? It was an item of pop culture. Okay. And this is through much of the 20th century. So I asked my class this semester, how many of you are familiar with Lift Every Voice and Sing? And there was silence. And not that there's a large number of Black identified students in the class, but there's more than a handful, shall we say. Not even any recognition there. Okay, times change. And then I played Beyoncé. You know where I'm going with this. We're nodding and smiling here. I played a clip from Beyoncé at Coachella, right? Where she starts her show singing Lift Every Voice and Sing in this very theatrically exaggerated kind of setting, and there's a marching band and drum line, which is also kind of very culturally specific to, you know, certainly black colleges, historically black colleges and universities. Plus it's Beyonce, right? It's the queen. So who is not going to know this, right? So I played this. I'm like, how many people are familiar with this? The same crickets.
Really?
Right?
Wow.
Right, exactly. Exactly, right now. Again, Coachella was a few years ago. But this tells us, right, that we kind of have to be aware of the passage of time.
Yes.
And how it affects what we consider pop culture. Again, are they products, or do we look at elements of how things speak to us over time and how they morph over time? And to me, this is becoming more and more interesting. Is not the object itself, but how the object morphs and how do students respond to it now? And so let's talk about not Lift Every Voice and Sing and the cultural centrality that it had through most of the 20th century. Let's talk about how and why it's now not the power it was, right? So it's not about the product, it's about the process over time, which, again, I'm not necessarily, I don't want to say I'm not prepared to do, but I'm not used to doing.
Well, and for us in the history classroom, that's perfectly appropriate, right?
Of course.
This is the work that we do
in
memory studies. That's the work that we do. But that takes us from a very different place. So I think I've thought about pop culture as a shorthand, right? It helps me get a point, but if it doesn't work, if they don't know the reference,
if it's not a common language,
if we're not conscious of the diversity, then that shorthand no longer works. But you're talking about, Don, something much more significant than just cultural shorthands, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're talking about a process that is also a part of an important part of education.
Oh, indeed, right? Indeed, yeah.
That's true. I mean, I consider myself to be of the 20th century. I still haven't really adjusted to this new one yet. Or maybe I'm of the 14th century. Some days it feels that way too. But there's certainly like a much greater aspect of ephemera, I think, in the 21st century that, I mean, this Beyonce example is kind of blowing my mind, but you just said it was like 3 years ago or 4 years ago. And I think a lot of the way that pop culture is consumed now is that it's consumed and then instantly forgotten, right? Mm-hmm. Like you pull something up, you Google something, you want to reference it, you pull up a TikToker and then it falls out of your memory.
Yeah. And the kind of interesting thing about that is that pop culture, as all culture evolves, to serve needs, right? And what is that telling us about ourselves and where we are in and out of the classroom when our need is for something new now,
God,
tomorrow?
Constantly.
Right, exactly. The old strategy of kind of bringing in jargon that may be kind of floating around out there, I don't even bother with that anymore because by the time it hits my consciousness, it's been dead for 3 weeks.
Right.
At least.
Right. And an attempt to be cool often becomes, you know, just a really embarrassing failure at trying to be relevant. So can't go there, right? But
no,
again, the need as to how quickly it has changed makes our task, if we are going to try to come to students, it makes our task even more difficult. Not prohibitive, but difficult.
Or it could provide opportunities for them to participate more and to contribute more, which is kind of what I hope we could do. You know, if you can ask them direct questions, or you could say, you know, when I was in college, you know, and then you give them an example, how does this resonate with you?
Yeah.
You know, I think one of the hardest parts for me is having to defend some of the thinkers and the writers who I loved when I was there. You know, I'm teaching the Intro to Women's Studies class and they didn't like bell hooks and... I know, and I just loved her. You know, I mean, she was
crushed.
Oberlin when I was.
I just mentioned her in class today.
Yeah, and, you know, and they didn't like her. And I thought, oh, no. You know, so what does this mean? Do I take her off of the syllabus? Do I, you know, have to think about another piece of hers? Do I need to introduce her in a different way? But, you know, that can also be very disorienting. Something that has been a standard in my Intro Women's Studies class since I started teaching it in 2009. And, you know, what does it mean now, 15 years later?
Mm-hmm. And again, further evidence. This is really cool how these things are kind of just spinning back into themselves, but further evidence for that, for those of us who understand or have studied the process of communication or the dynamics of communication, right? It must be a two-way process. Communication does not function, at least effective communication does not function in one direction, right? It is dynamic. It remains there to charge the process. So yeah, so right, what are students saying? What are students bringing to these references?
We need to always think about it, but we also need to challenge them too. You know, why don't they like bell hooks? Like, what is it that somebody born in 2003 can't see in her? And they do have to understand that people had ideas before 2015, right? And that sometimes it's very shocking for them. I mean, especially in medieval history when, you know, we were just discussing guilds in my medieval studies class, and they keep saying, huh, you know, this is just like my union, or this is, you know, just like going to the mall. Not that these kids go to malls. That's a terrible example. Oh, my God. But, you know, it's just like
a case in point.
Oh, no, I can't believe I just said that. You know, so you do need to help them understand that there is continuity, there is a continuum, and they are not the first people to invent activism or communication or, you know, art or history or anything.
Indeed. Indeed.
Last comments so that, I mean, you can do, I know, it goes fast, doesn't it?
Yes.
These are 15-minute podcasts.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So strategies, solutions?
I don't know if there is a solution. I think it's probably a kind of age-old, if we can rely on things that kind of predate us, the old age-old strategy of keeping students foremost in our pedagogy, right? What do they need? What serves them as opposed to what do I have to give them today?
We need lower caps on our classes, right? So that we can foster discussion so that they don't feel intimidated. We need more resources so that they can access the readings that we want to assign. And, you know, we need more faculty so that we can offer more sections of classes and we can offer more topics. You know, I offer my Keen Arthur class once every 2 years, and maybe 20 students get to take it. You know, I mean, it's, these things are so limited. And I think maybe if they were taught more regularly or offered more regularly or became more visible, it might create a greater curiosity for them as well. That's not a strategy. That's my campaign stumping. So.
And with a real goal, right? Because if we understand that pop culture is infused with politics, right? I mean, pop culture is, in a sense, a kind of political intervention.
It's like a whole new podcast.
Oh, I'm sorry. But
no, I'm just
right. But indeed, when we realize that power, and we realize that we have the opportunity to use pop culture to disempower some of that politics of privilege, right? And lead closer to less injustice, greater justice, right, through our language, through our discursive choices. That kind of energizes those nights when I'm just like, oh, I just want to talk about this tomorrow. But I have to go and I have to prepare myself to be engaged, not to preach.
And we just got the word today that we have been awarded Hispanic Serving Institution status.
Yeah, HSI.
And that's a part of this discussion, too.
Yep.
We have a significant percentage of students whose culture is an important part of their learning process and our learning process as well.
Yeah, it's exciting.
It is. It was lovely to see. And in fact, I notified my students before class started today.
Oh, excellent. Yep. Excellent. So thanks so much to our guest today, Dr. Kate Alaco, professor at the Department of History, and Dr. Don Gagnon, professor in the Departments of English and Theater Arts. I think it's going to be pretty important to ask students to participate in part two of this conversation about the culture gap, the generation gap, the who the hell is Paul McCartney gap. So we'll move toward that in future episodes. You can look for a discussion about ungrading or contract grading, discussion about Danbury and the magic of Hat City, and a discussion about what makes a good course and what makes a bad course in higher education. We encourage you to submit your own ideas for these podcasts, for tipples. I'm Leslie Lindenauer, Director of the Center for Excellence in Learning and Teaching, and you can reach me at lindenauerl@wcsu.edu. Thanks.
Tipple is a production of WCSU Media, engineered by Peter Puccio and produced by Scott Volpe. Listen and subscribe on Spotify, Stitcher, SoundCloud, or anywhere you get your podcasts. And please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Follow us on Instagram and Twitter at WCSU Podcasts and on the university's Facebook and Twitter pages. And feel free to reach out to us by email at podcasts@wcsu.edu. Thanks for listening.
WCSU.